Okay, there we go. Logging in and encoding. So, and there's about a half a second difference between the volume bars on the deck and on the encoder, which is about right. So, let's...
I just want to refresh and check it.
Okay. Yeesh.
See what that's doing.
Okay, we seem to be coming through now.
Well, yeah, give it about another 10, 15 seconds, because it's a minute behind, usually. But any minute now, it should be showing up. Oh, I forgot. Fuck, I need to make another sound effects menu.
Okay, yeah, we're coming through now.
We're coming through now?
Yep.
Okay, good deal.
Yay! Didn't have to call spatial audio. Fuck them. And we only have an hour left of the show. Huzzah!
Oh, crap. How do I do this? I'm trying to make a... here we go. Can I make it in here? I'm trying to make a folder for our... for our sound effects.
Okay.
Okay. So,
since we're doing this completely off the cuff here now, the musical interlude has been my way of keeping people entertained while we sort out our stupid fucking program.
Well, I'm not sure what went on with that. That was really strange. Okay, how do I start by? Doesn't have date. Okay, so which one of these is the more recent?
Yeah, poor Rendell.
Those are promos. I don't want promos.
Yeah, poor Rendell. He's sorting out his all the programming and crap like that. This program has been more hassle than it's worth sometimes.
Sometimes?
Okay,
more
a
hassle
lot.
Than it's worth just about every week.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Sound. Close out at least should be in here.
Okay, well, while he's sorting that out, there actually was a few articles that I want to talk about, and this will be our special 1 hour Whoops, We're Idiots and Hate Our Program special.
Hey, that's Flash in the Pan. God damn it, where'd the finite exposure opening go? I'm not sure where it went. Okay. Sam, come back up. Where the fuck did I put you? Chaos and, content. Sound effects. Demo effects.
Yeah, you're getting to listen to us muck with this live. That's how pissed off we're at the program.
Oh, yeah. Sounds, new intro. There it is. I've got our intro, and I've got our closeout. That's basically all we need.
Okay.
You don't usually use anything other than that.
Okay, we're good. We're good. We're cool. You cool? I'm cool? It's all cool. And if you cut the mics and play the intro, we can fake it's only an hour-long episode.
Yeah, but nobody will believe that. Come on.
Shh. I can hope. I can believe.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I
want to
give a demon his wings.
You know what, fucker? We'll just say this is the show. I'm not going to cut it and start doing all that stuff at 6 o'clock. We'll just post this up and they'll get a... We'll just call it the special show. Because it is rather special.
That's all it's going to be titled. Finite Exposure. Special.
This is a special show.
We're so special.
Oh, crap. I had some sound queued up, too, and my library is all fucked up now.
Sort it out later. Well, let's just do the important shit, and then we'll figure out where we're going from there. How about that?
Go ahead.
Well, okay. So
I don't know what the hell to do anymore. All messed up.
Okay, since, you know, we actually did have some, like, important things to talk about. Well, okay. More if we actually sat down and watched a movie. Both of us actually saw this movie and watched it, so we know what each other is talking about. We can review it. And this special, very, very special case, it is Justice League Doom.
You know what's funny? I watched that on Sunday, and before I watched it, I went over to Walmart, and I saw the DVD. I'm like, that looks, isn't that what Cody said? But that's, no. And so, yeah, so it's like $15 over at Walmart. I'm going to probably end up buying it.
Well, yeah, well, hey,
it's a good story. It's a very good story.
Well, yeah, it's based off of what was it, around 2000, they did a story arc called The Tower of Babel. Babelfish, I don't care. But no, the whole premise of it is we all know Batman's a paranoid, you know, schemer who always has a plan within a plan within a plan within a, you know, a brightly, you know, a bright suitcase with a plan on it, you know. And basically the whole thing breaks down to is the whole Tower of Babel arc is he has a backup plan should the Justice League ever go rogue, thanks to, you know, the Injustice League from what was it, Dimension 2, Dimension 3, something like that.
You'd know before I would.
Yeah, they broke, you know, they got into the main universe and took over everyone's bodies and, you know, started wreaking havoc. Well, Batman set up a contingency plan that struck at every single weakness of the Justice League or of the founding of the main members at the time to be able to take them out should they ever go rogue. But it wasn't, you know, designed to kill. It was to incapacitate until Ra's al Ghul gets his hands on it, and then becomes a plan to kill. You know, I found the Tower of Babel was a really, really good comic arc. I actually remember reading that comic arc. And when I heard that they were coming out with Justice League Doom, I'm like, you know, maybe they're doing another Doomsday. No. When I heard it was based on the Tower of Babel, I was like, yes! It's a movie I can actually watch and enjoy and then compare. So I was excited about that. You know, but before we get into let's talk about some of the differences here first off, okay?
Okay, now, the next hour and 50 minutes of ranting are sponsored by him, because I have no knowledge of the comics, nor do I really give a shit, because I thought the show was good. But here's all the reasons why they fucked up in categorical order by chaos.
Well, no, I'm not even going to go into things they fucked up or went on. I actually put in the notes, I put in the show notes for the day, a comparison chart of what they changed between the movie and the story arc, and the comics. And you can sit there and actually read it, because it's detailed. Or, sorry, my bad. It wasn't, in the movie, like, right off the top, okay. Off the top, it's not Ra's al Ghul that is, you know, the mastermind behind, you know, the movie. It's Vandal Savage. Yes, the immortal caveman. Which, again, you know, that's a very logical, very interesting choice. Because it's another one. They're swapping out one immortal bad guy for another immortal bad guy. It works without, you know, changing it too
and
much.
Honestly, I don't know about Justice League, but in Batman, Ra's al Ghul really was overkill. I mean, seemed like he showed up all over the place. And like I said, I don't know about Justice League, but I'd never heard of Vandal Savage before, so it was really neat to see.
Vandal Savage is one of those bad guys that pops up once in a while because he has been around since, you know, cavemen. And I loved how they, you know, they took the time, they didn't, you know, draw it out or anything too elaborate. It was pretty much, it was a quick little 2 minute of, who the fuck am I? I am Vandal Savage. I've been around since cavemen. I am immortal thanks to a meteorite.
And it was cool that they told that in there just so, I mean, they didn't go, you know, 40-minute expose on his history, but they gave you enough to understand how he could be there.
Yeah, how he's there.
And something like this is really all you need. You don't need a lengthy thing to set everything up. You just need to know enough to know that that the situation is plausible enough.
Yeah. Well, and his motivations were were very straightforward, but we'll get into that here in a few minutes. But no, and if you're going to substitute Ra's al Ghul, who has been featured in a lot of animated and in the live action movies and whatnot, Ra's al Ghul, who's supposed to be, the leader of the League of Assassins, the Shadow Guild, crap like that, is a man who's really too far out in the light. Vandal Savage. Some people will sit there and go, who the fuck is he? Just like Matt did. So,
And when you're talking about somebody of this type, that's really the best way to go. You don't want them to be too familiar.
No, and
because
it was very...
Then it kind of gets lost.
Yeah. So, that was...
The mystique isn't there anymore.
Yeah. And so that was a very logical and very working and... I liked that change. That was a very nice change. So, right there. Good note. Next up is, the next one, and this is a big change, kind of. Well, this is like 3 points of changes they did. In the original Tower of Babel, Plastic Man and Aquaman were part of the Justice League. Well, in the Justice League Doom, they aren't there. I can understand because Aquaman is one of those characters that doesn't seem to sell well in general, especially when he's a main member of Justice League, unless it's part of Justice League Unlimited.
Especially in the cartoons, he's always had a hard time because cartoons, what sells you over is flashiness. And there really isn't anything, in his defense, he's a cool character, but there really isn't anything flashy about him. So people look at him, and he's a script character. He could have come in if he was like Cyborg was in this. He could have been like the non-working member who kind of put things all together, but he couldn't have been a major thing just because it's so hard to get, especially younger kids, to care about a character like that. You just really... can't pull it off anymore.
Well, they could have utilized Aquaman or Plastic Man, but it would have been one of those hard dynamics to utilize for the storyline they wove, because it was a very nicely done storyline. It didn't really have any slow parts. It just it kept pace and didn't drag.
Plastic Man, in his defense, though, would have worked because he had a real sense of humor about him.
Yeah.
He could have been the comedy foil of the whole thing. If they wanted one, they didn't need one.
No.
But if they wanted one, he would have done good in that.
But you have to think about, how would they have worked Plastic Man in there? When you really think about it. He's one of those characters that isn't, featured as big here and there. A lot of people still go, who the hell is Plastic Man? Plastic Man, just as a little side note, is a reformed villain who joined the Justice League, who is a flat-out damn dirty pervert. I mean, he has gotten beaten up by every single woman in the Justice League for one thing or another. So.
Well, The Flash was like that too for a long time.
Yeah.
But,
I can understand that.
Plastic Man is everybody's dirty uncle given form, basically.
Yeah.
Or everybody's dirty anything.
Yeah.
Every dirty relative just cheers for him.
So, I can understand them not including Plastic Man. I'm on the fence about Aquaman, but that's just me. They didn't have, it wasn't Wally West. It was Barry Allen. It wasn't Kyle Rayner. It was Hal Jordan. That's negligible alterations no one really cares about because most people go, who the hell are they nowadays?
Right. Most people don't remember enough about it to really get angry about that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now they did do some big alterations to, the methods used to take out the Justice League. A sterling example here is, Martian Manhunter, his big fear, is a weakness to him is fire. you know, they kept that, you know, whole, he's secreting, you know, magnesium and getting lit on fire. They just changed the method of how it was delivered. In the comic, it was, you know, nanites turned his skin to magnesium. In the comic, it was a in the movie, it was a poison. Okay.
Yeah, and it was still effective.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew, even without knowing anything about him, you knew that the shit had hit the fan when that happened.
Yeah.
You didn't really need any other info other than, well, it kind of got set up with the others before what the motive was is just to find various ways to take people out.
Yeah,
but you didn't absolutely understand what was happening, but just the fact that that was the goal.
Yeah, it wasn't a big, massive change. It was subtle enough that it worked. You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't have a problem with that. You know, the next one is this one was a complete change around. Completely change around. Is with Hal Jordan's Green Lantern, you know. In the comic, he was rendered blind via post-hypnotic suggestion, you know, and fear and crap like that, so he couldn't use his ring. Well, in the movie, they changed that around. They used Aquaman, you know, the one that was used on Aquaman on Green Lantern, and exposed him to the Scarecrow's fear gas, and then had him ending up killing an android version of Carol Ferris, who in the storyline, in both the comic and the movie, Star Sapphire. So,
right.
You know, and that, you know, that's a change that actually makes more sense. That makes a whole lot more sense that they, you know, did that in the movie. Exposing him to fear gas, you know, the Scarecrow's fear gas, and then thinking he, you know, killed Carol Ferris. That's genius. That's a brilliant change around. I like that change.
The thing about that is that it really, I mean, that is a scene I could see, like, and even me, I was actually getting kind of teared up about that, because that guy played it, or the voice and everything was played very well.
And it was
Nathan
Fillion.
It's like, how many kids got how dark that scene was?
That was a very dark scene, that was.
And
Nathan Fillion, you know, who's playing Hal Jordan, who last played him in Green Lantern, Emerald Knights. He plays a better Green Lantern than Ryan Reynolds. So, you know, Nathan Fillion just nailed that perfectly. And, you know, you can tell he got a lot of those acting chops from playing on daytime soap operas back in the day. So, you know, that was a perfect scene. That just worked beautifully.
That's something everybody should... If everybody who bitches about animation should be forced to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, there's a lot of bullshit in it, but there's also little moments like that that really, they really help people like us who like that thing, they really help us have a reason to say, yeah, you know, you can go off and say whatever you want, but we've got these moments over here that are better than anything you're watching on TV most of the time. So.
Oh, yeah. You can only get that kind of drama on really good late night shows or soap operas. Comparatively.
And of course, the two things that people poo-poo watching anyway.
Who takes
soap operas seriously? And late night is nothing. To most people, late night's up nothing but infomercials. So.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, next up, you know, we got Wonder Woman. Okay. They didn't change that around too much.
No, the only thing they might have changed, and I don't know, is who the hallucination was. I don't know who the hallucination was in the story, but at least for this, it fit.
Oh, let me check that real quick. I just had it. I closed out my damn thing real quick.
Now the link that you gave me, no, that didn't have that. It just said that that's what her thing was she'd start fighting until she couldn't fight anymore. It never said who the illusion was of, so.
Well, in the original comic, she was trapped in a virtual reality simulation, battling against an opponent whom she can't defeat. So, and in the movie, you know, it's, she, you know, nanites again, she's poisoned with nanites that cause her to keep fighting Cheetah over and over and over again when it's not Cheetah there. And that
Cheetah was cool. I had never really seen a version of her. That was a good version of her.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a minute change that worked. I love it.
Yeah.
The next one, and this one, I'm not too sure how I sit on this one because it's, you know, the Flash. In the film, they attach, you know, an explosive bracelet to him, and he can't stop accelerating, otherwise it explodes. And he can't take it off.
Well, yeah, they gave him the speed problem, basically.
Yeah, they gave him the speed, you know, scenario. Where in the comic, he was shot with a vibra bullet that caused him to experience seizures at light speed. You know, making like, you know, the 22 minutes he was running feel like months of agony. So I'm kind of... That's a tough one. That is a real tough one because on one hand, you know, it's the Flash. You got to keep. They kept the scenario. You know, they kept it basically the same. He had to keep running no matter what. But they just changed the outcome. If he stopped running, an explosion would happen that would take out a 3-mile, you know, radius.
Right.
If he, you know, it were in the comic, if he stopped running, the bullet would kill him. So, but if he kept running, it would cause seizures. So, I'm on the fence about that one.
Well, I think the reason they did it, and this is again for those of the watchers who are very short on attention span, is there's more urgency to an explosion than to, I mean, and how many people I know. People may look at me like I'm fucking nuts, but how many people, everybody, well, I say this because I've lived with them, people know about a seizure, or some people do, but they don't know what it looks like, and, I mean, honestly, you don't really know what, because you don't know what it looks like, or you don't know much about it, you don't realize what kind of a threat it is. You attach a bomb to somebody, everybody knows what a bomb will do.
Yeah.
So it's easier for the audience to identify with the outcome. So, and honestly, I mean, the bomb is something physical. You can see it. You know it's there. With the seizure, it's like, what's he going to do? Fall over and twitch? Well, big fucking whoop. If he just stops running, then we'll never see that. Because he'll never stop. If he's still got the bomb, every shot he's in, we still see that bomb. So the threat is easier for people to identify. Yeah. I think that's why they did that.
And I will say that the setup for the, you know, attaching the bomb to his wrist was a very perfect setup. My one little kind of hitch with it is, you know, what happened to the train?
Yeah.
That is the one question I'm wondering is, what happened to that train? Because, you know, the Mirror Master trapped him on a train rigged with explosives that had a 3-mile, you know, radius of, you know, detonation. So, he was literally in a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. So, I want to know what happened to the train. Did they kill the grandmother? Did they kill the grandmother?
No, I don't think there was any probability of any of that happening. I think what it was Mirror Master, who I've never seen before, and I really like him. He's a really interesting villain. So I think what that was just a modus operandi to keep Flash interested. I don't think anything was wrong with the train. I don't think anything will have happened to Grandma. It's just, I've got this trap to get him to fall into it, he needs to do this. How am I going to get him to trust me so much that something bad will happen that he'll knowingly do this? And big whoop, he's a villain, and he stretch the truth. They do that.
Well,
and that's the whole reason why they do it, is because the good guys have this psychological issue that they believe what the bad guys tell them. they have to. They're kind of in a rut there. Because the bad guys are seeing worst-case scenario, and they can't, for a moment, think that that might not happen.
Yeah.
So I think it was just a way to get him to essentially booby-trap himself.
Yeah,
if he wouldn't have set it up that way, he might not have gone along with it, and then that whole thing's basically thrown out the window.
Well, and you did bring up a good point. Is, you know, Mirror Master, you don't know who the hell that villain is. Not a lot of people know Mirror Master unless you read the comics or watched Justice League Unlimited. But even then, Justice League Unlimited didn't really portray the Mirror Master the way he was in the comics, who was, he was a psychopath. I mean, he was certified psychopath. And they, you know, they portrayed that menace just, you know, they portrayed that menace and that intelligence perfectly, because he's kind of the Joker to the Flash's Batman kind of scenario.
Yeah.
And, you know,
so he's a lot more mellowed out. He's not as hyper as the Joker is.
Yeah, that is one thing, you know, they did address in Justice League Unlimited, is eventually he did clean up his act because he got put on medication. You know, if he comes off his meds, he becomes the supervillain Mirror Master again.
That's so interesting.
But the fact they actually portrayed him as this menacing bad guy who was willing to kill people with no, you know, without a second thought, that, you know, that's nice. You know, they portrayed a villain the way a villain should be.
Yeah.
And then finally, we've got the hero that I just don't like in general is Superman. You know, the changeover, I understand it, because not a lot of people in the, you know, even if you read the comics, some people are still going, what the hell is red kryptonite? You know?
Yeah, I looked at that and I had heard of it, but I never understood the origins of it. I just figured it was a plot twist they needed to use for something, and it turns out I was right. But yeah, that would have had, you would have had to have a whole nother, like, 5-minute thing at least.
Yeah, to explain that.
On why that was there. And the movie just didn't need something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, they just simply did it with, you know, a standard villain of Batman's, Metallo, you know, with his kryptonite heart and a kryptonite bullet. You know, and that's, you know, that's the easiest way to do it, is, you know, oh, there's somebody about to kill himself by jumping off, you know, the Daily Planet. Oh, it's not somebody, it's actually Metallo in disguise. He just shot Superman with a bullet. Oh, it wasn't a kryptonite bullet.
That goes back to the thing I said about Mirror Master. It was basically just a ruse to get the good guy in close enough that they could spring the trap. So, yeah, they did a marvelous job on this movie.
Yeah, you know, and they put the animation quality was very nice. I like the animation. They could have fixed some of the lines here and there, but yeah, I'll give it a solid B+ grade for the animation.
I mean, for the animation being as it is, I mean, it's not the most impressive animation, but it hasn't been for almost 2 decades now.
Yeah.
But they do a good job of the animation complementing the story.
Yeah. So the animation, B+ grade. The storyline.
Yeah.
You know, for adapting it off of a well-known, or pretty well-known story comic line, I give it an A. Because the adaptation doesn't take away from anything. The changes make sense. You know, the whole thing works, you know, overall.
Yeah.
The story flow, besides a few bumps here and there that were minor details, like, you know, what happened to the grandma, but, you know, that's just me. It's a fridge logic thing. You know, I stopped watching the movie and I went to the fridge, opened up the fridge, and I suddenly remembered, what the hell happened to the grandmother?
well, for all we know, because this was Mirror Master, that could have been a hallucination. That could have just been a hologram.
It could have been real. That's one of those things, you know, what the hell? You know, the ending was very, you know, very cinematic, and I highly advise you watch that movie. Because there, that ending was just perfect. It was pure Superman, Batman.
In a way, it was pure awesome, and in another way, it's like, oh, for God's sake, they went again. You know that they would pull something out of their ass to save the world. And they did. I mean, that's the hero's job. But
yeah.
In another sense, it's just, it's like, God damn it, can't the bad guys just win once? Come on, we're not asking for much. We're just asking once. Whoa.
Oh?
That's something I'm hearing.
B5.
I'm hearing voices. What the hell?
It's G57. Not for me, I don't think. Oh, yeah, it is for me. What the hell?
But, you know,
I think I know what's wrong. I think it's going through the sound card.
Okay.
Rather than the line in. I'm going to have to get that fixed. Okay, so no watching porn during the radio show. That would be a disaster.
let's not think about that one, shall we? The very ending of the movie, you know, after they save the day and whatnot, the inclusion of Cyborg, you know, and Cyborg was kind of the deus ex machina of the movie, but they made him work. He at least earned his place by actually doing something instead of being, oh, no. No. He could interface with the computers. He could, you know, solve these issues, this and that. And
he did things that were understandable, given what he was.
Yeah. So they ditched Plastic Man and Aquaman. They replaced them with Cyborg, which works, and it's also a nice current nod to the new 52 universe, with Cyborg as a member of the Justice League.
And it ended the same way with Batman. They didn't change that either.
No, they didn't change that at all. So that, you know, and that was very nice. So they kept the very ending of it true to the comics, and we're not giving it away. You can look it up. You can watch it. Whatever have you. I think the only thing that could have been really better is, you know, they could have altered the Flash thing. You know, maybe combine the Viber Bullet with the bomb. You know, so it tortures him while he's running.
Well, yeah, I mean, a piece of metal shooting straight through your wrist, you'd think that would hurt just a little. He didn't even show really much. He showed it just long enough to go, oh, fuck, yeah, I gotta start running now. And it's like, okay, never mind.
Yeah,
it's like, what the hell meds are you on that you can't feel a bolt going straight through your body?
Yeah, so, you know, they
would have fallen over.
They could have made that flow a little bit better. That's one of those little bumps that they could have made better. I give serious credit to all the actors because, you know, they had Nathan Fillion return playing Hal Jordan. They had Michael Rosenbaum return to play Wally West, the Flash. They had basically everyone from Justice League, the cartoon, come back and revoice their characters because that's what you got to do there. I did like Alexis, was it Alexis Denisnoff or was it Paul Blackthorne playing Mirror Master? One of them. The voice actor for Mirror Master was very nice. He's no Mark Hamill, but Mark Hamill's retired, so.
Well, and he isn't supposed to be. I mean, Mirror Master is a psycho, but so is most of the villains. But he's a quiet psycho. He's a rational psycho. He wouldn't be the jumping around in the hoo-hoo-ha-ha. He's just like, yep, okay, found you. Okay, bang.
Yeah.
And then he goes, off he goes. He's not really one for celebrating. He has a job, he's going to do it, and then he's off to the next one.
Yeah. I will give credit
being more of a mellow character. I think it suits him better.
Yeah, I will give credit to Vandal Savage's plot to take over the world. That's a very top-notch, very well-thought-out, if overly complicated plot that would work quite well. I did like the fact they threw in the Royal Flush Gang, even if they were just, you know, one-off villains. You know, they weren't part of the actual story. They were there, though.
I've never seen them before.
Oh, yeah, the Royal Flush Gang. There's a fun villain group right there that pops up here and there.
It looks like a fun group.
It is. All the selections for villains, you know, to take out the various characters was nice. I did like the fact they brought in Bane, and they made reference to Bane breaking Batman, and then breaking Bruce Wayne, you know, in the story arc.
Yeah, that's
one
really
of the big
cool
changes that was nice and worked.
Yeah. Well, and if you think about it, at the timeline that they were going on, this would have happened after that, and why the hell else would they get Bane? Bane's already beat him.
Yeah.
If you wanted to take somebody else out, wouldn't you want to get the person who did it already once?
Yeah.
There really wasn't anybody in that scenario that they could have gone with.
Yeah. So overall, I give the whole movie, you know, adaptation, voice acting, the whole nine yards, I give it a very solid A-. Do you agree with that sentiment?
well, basing it on something, on somebody who just didn't know any of that, oh, at least an A. Because it's got a very good story. The beginning's entertaining enough to get you to know the characters and whatnot, kind of show you how they interact with each other. And then the story based after that, I mean, I marked out big time when the Legion of Doom came back.
Yeah.
Because I remember the Amazing Super Friends in the 70s when the Hulk and the Legion of Doom was, you know, where Lex Luthor and all the bad guys were. So it's like, awesome. I mean, it didn't click on me until he said it, but it's like, first thing I thought of was like Zartan or something from G.I. Joe because of the swamp thing.
And actually, like, that is something I will note that does help the score a good bit, is there was no Lex Luthor.
Yes. Well, there was in mention because of that's where they got a lot of the technology. But that's,
yeah,
you know, and again, you know, why not? He's the main brain in that world of stuff like that. So, of course, you'd go to him to get the technology.
Yeah.
But then that's all he was. I think they mentioned him when they were hacking the back computer, and that's the only time. And that was just to say, yep, this is where this came from. Don't worry, it's good. So, and he never came up again, which is good because he doesn't have to.
Exactly.
You know, that's not anything that had anything to do with him.
Exactly. So, you know, that, you know, overall, I give the movie an A-. Rendell, you give it about an A-.
I give it an A because I won't go an A-, because some of the things you're grading against, I didn't know. So
even,
I'm not looking at it like that. There are some things that, you know, like, they're just, like, the ending is just kind of a thing for me. I would just like to see the bad guys win something once in a while, you know? It'd be nice.
They almost did.
They actually came closer than just about anybody else I've seen in one of these shows. And, like, it's, you know, just I think the only thing that's really the only thing that took it down for me was they came so close, and I knew they wouldn't win. But it's almost more disappointing to see them literally right on the verge of it and then still get cock-blocked by some major thing that should never have happened anyway. But it's like, oh, well, the hero's got to save it somehow, so, okay.
Yeah.
That's really good, and like I said, you can't have the bad guys win in something like this.
No.
But actually,
I don't know
that even that would make it an A+. But I'm just afraid of A+ because for the same reason I won't grade it down. I think you're talking about things that were slightly different, and now I'm kind of wondering if I hadn't known about that, it would have been an A+.
Yeah.
But just the minor alterations, now I'm wondering how well it would have worked with just the originals. Although I still think this was better. Plastic Man, maybe. I just don't think Aquaman is good for this kind of story.
Yeah.
But I think it did very well. If anybody asks me if I recommend it, hell yeah. I'd practically go out and buy it for you just to make sure that you watch it, just because it is that. It's one of those ones that if you are a fan of that style of movie, there really is no reason in any shape or form that you should not own this. I mean, if you're a fan of superhero movies, if you're a fan of cartoons, you know, this is something that you should own, and you really have no excuse not to own. Because this is a solid this can run plot-wise, and like we said with the Green Lantern and with some of that stuff, drama-wise, can run head-to-head with a lot of movies that are out there now. Because there are some scenes that really affect you. And even some drama movies can't pull that off. So
yeah.
It's something that everybody should at least see, if not own. Just because I think a lot of people who hate comic movies will really have a wake-up call. Or comic TV series will definitely have a wake-up call.
Yeah.
If this is the kind of story and acting that they're doing in it, you know, then might shut a few of the haters up on that. I don't know that we'd be that lucky, but we can hope.
Yeah. Well, with that out of the way, I actually do want to hit on these points real quick. The Walking Dead news bonanza. Since why bother with a break since we're only running an hour today officially?
Yeah.
Well, first off, a major spoiler has hit for this next week's episode, Better Angels. Reports are saying are if they're to be believed that this is the episode where Shane finally dies. Which feels like it should hardly even qualify as a spoiler anymore. But moving on. And it's at
well,
Rick Sands.
It's a movie. People are going to die, and occasionally it's somebody important. So it's kind of one of those things. Well, this is cool, but yeah, I guess it just kind of had to happen. Now the thing is he going to die and come back since it's a zombie movie?
Yeah, so. Well, basically how it's supposed to break down is Shane spends a while explaining how there's no way the two of them can be around, you know, anymore, and he dares Rick to kill him in cold blood, which, he feels sure, Rick won't do it. Rick puts down the gun, approaches him, and then guts him like a trout. However, Shane comes back as a zombie, at which point Carl shows up and kills him. That's if the reports are to be believed. Now, we already know that Amazon has spoiled, Shane dies this season. Ooh. A lot of people are excited about that. Personally, I'd be more excited if Carl or Miss Manipulative Whore Boots herself, Rick's wife, dies. Unfortunately, that won't happen for a while in the comics. Damn. hey, what can I say? I'm being honest. But, mind you, this is all rumor and speculation. Take it with a grain of salt. Next is, Robert Kirkman sat down and decided to discuss how Dale's death, which was a big, last-minute shocker last night. I sat there, I will be fully honest, I almost started to cry. I was like, they killed the old man! What the hell? Because Dale became a total badass in the comics. I mean, he's this old, he's the voice of reason. He's the Jiminy Cricket. He's kind of the last dredges of, the old civilization hanging on, keeping rationality around. And eventually, goes from just being that, an old man, to becoming a badass. And they killed him. They killed him. Out of nowhere. And I was shocked. I was just absolutely shocked and amazed by that. Because, I mean, why? Why would they do that? But, on the other hand, it goes to show that the show still has a lot of lefts, rights, and all sorts of twists and turns to keep us going. Robert Kirkman, the comics creator and an executive producer, actually sat down and did a discussion with somebody, I can't remember who it was, talking about, how Dale's death affects the group at large, and he went on saying, losing that role is very important. This is a time that, more than ever, when they really need someone to stand there and say, hey, this is not the popular decision, but I'm still voicing this because it needs to be said. Well, they don't have that anymore. Now we don't have, we don't know how they're going to deal with Randall, and we don't know how they're going to, what they're going to do, as Rick and Shane continue to butt heads. They've lost a very important piece of their ensemble, and they're not going to be able to make the same decisions that they would have made, and that's really going to affect the group as a whole. They are kind of in a bad place, and we're, going to have to deal with that. And that's what, Robert Kirkman said. He also wanted to address, Carl's indirect culpability in Dale's death, and I'm going to sit down and say this, well, actually I am sitting. I'm not saying indirect. Because of that little shit-faced little maggot child, Dale is dead. Not only is Dale dead, but a perfectly good cow is dead, too. Two very important things in a zombie apocalypse. Food and people. Depending on if you're a zombie, the both, you know, both are the same thing. But people, especially, you know, the Jiminy Cricket, you know, keep everyone sane, being dead, that really affects, you know, that really affects things. A dead cow, that's like a month of food gone. What the hell? So that little bastard, who, instead of, you know, manning up and shooting the zombie like he was, no, he decides to poke and prod at it with sticks and stones till it breaks free from its swampy imprisonment. And he loses a gun in the process. That kid should be shocked. He is too dumb to live. But no, he's going to keep living. So I directly blame that little snot-nosed son of a bitch for Dale's death. Yes, I am very vocal about that.
We know this.
But, you know, so, you know, Kirkman also talks about, you know, you know, how that's, you know, indirect culpability. Indirect my ass. You know, and the fun of this world is dealing with Carl. It's one, you know, one thing to have to grow, you know, to have grown to adulthood in the world before. Not have to deal with the indirect civilization of things that are going on now. But to have never grown to adulthood and to not really have any kind of basis for realizing how screwed up things are, this is Carl's norm. So while he did, to a certain extent, cause Dale's death, how he deals with that is going to be very different than how someone would deal with it if they had not grown up in this world. We're going to see him grow and change over time and twist and turn into something that may not be recognizable as what we perceive a child to be, which is really kind of cool. He also suggests that there's going to be some major revelations about the nature of the zombies by the end of the season. So, okay, in the comics, Carl over like the course of two story arcs, he grows to be a psychopath and then suffers amnesia. Over the course of one season, the kid's kind of grown into a psychopath and an idiot. He's Shane 2.0, but half the size and half the brain power, and none of the balls at all. And, you know, he's really become a worthless character. And, you know, that's saying something, because, you know, kids can be, you know, very innovative, very useful characters if properly applied. Carl has become just a completely useless character. He is more useless than Shane at this point. Because at least Shane can shoot a gun and kill a zombie. That little snot-nosed son of a bitch won't. Yes, I'm angry. This is angry chaos.
Yes, we
know that. Yeah. You know, and it goes on for a while, you know, talking about the David Morrissey as the governor and Kirkman, you know, and how dark and extreme the third season's going to get. And, you know, so the show is going into a very interesting direction. But everyone really was caught by surprise, especially the internet, with, you know, Dale's death. Everyone was sitting here waiting for Shane to die, just chomping at the bit, frothing at the mouth, just like, kill him, kill him, kill him! And then Dale gets knocked off. It's just like, what, no! So, you know, the show is, you know, really exciting. With only two episodes left of the season, I want to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how they get through that.
Yeah. It should be real fun. Side ridiculous note. Only a couple people actually care about this one. This Paul Blackthorne has been reportedly cast as Detective Quentin Lance, father of Green Arrow's love interest, Laurel, and who is described as a gruff, determined city detective who believes true justice can only come from law and order. That's for the show The Arrow, which is based off the Green Arrow, coming to CW here sooner or later. Like, anyone gives a shit? I don't. But it's a comic geek thing, might as well mention. Okay, I'm better. Sorry.
Are you sure?
I'm better now. I got that angry frustration and wrath out about that little shit stain. What can I say? And can I help you? What do you need? You're looming over top of me while I'm talking. Okay. Thanks for the memo. Anywho. Yes. Speaking of zombies, actually, real quick, and because I got to throw this. No, I watch this, and this is a real fun little app. And too bad I can't get it for the phone I just got. Sad. And it's an actual fitness game. It's an actual honest God fitness game called Zombies Run. Currently, it's an iPhone app that is half audio adventure, half exercise motivator. Basically, how it works is using the magic of maps, it takes your location and plots out a route that will be filled with various tasks and missions, quote unquote, based on you being runner number 5 in a post zombie apocalypse world. You'll gather supplies, quote unquote, from real life locations while avoiding hordes of zombies of the living dead, quote unquote, and get a good workout in the progress. You know, this is actually a real fantastic nerd-based idea. You know, it looks like, you know, there are enough missions to keep it interesting and help a nerd on a daily jog. And I mean, you know, if you have an iPhone, you can purchase it now. Android users will get it, get it here soon in the spring. And, well, if you have a BlackBerry, you don't get nice things. But, you know, it's... I watched the videos that they have for it. Basically, you know, it's... you don't look at the screen or anything. You just go on a jog, and it'll tell you, you know, turn left up, you know, where soon, stuff like that. It uses a combination of GPS and Siri sort of thing.
Hmm.
You know, tell you where to go. But then, it's got, you know, little mission things that, like, collect a food item, collect water sample, stuff like that. You aren't actually collecting anything. You just hit a checkpoint, basically, in your running. And then if a zombie horde appears, you have to alter your path to, you know, run around them to avoid them while still collecting items. And then you finish your run when you get back to home base, wherever you started. Or wherever your ending point is. So that's, you know, that's actually real fun. I'm not a jogger. I'm not even a sprint. I'm like a dwarf, okay? I run over short distances, but beyond that, no. I can run enough to get away.
Yeah, unless the cops are involved, you don't run.
I've got cruising speed at all times. You know, I'm at impulse power. I only do warp drive when I have to. But this would be an app if they ever came out for, you know, ever adapted it so I could use it on my cheap ass phone. That I would use it. I would actually go out running with it because that would be fun. It would motivate me. I had fun with a friend got some stupid like their Android or something. It's basically capture the flag with zombies. You know, you have to drive around or run around or whatever have you, and you dodge these zombie hordes that are randomly generated, and you have to get to a location which, you know, oh, that, you know, if you get there, you win. If you don't, you get eaten. It's that simple. And, you know, it's catch the flag thing with zombies. It's a fun little app, and I can see they took that idea and just evolved it. I would use it. What about you?
Well, yeah, I prefer to bike, but that's just me. So I don't. Some people would probably call that cheating. But
well, you could, you know,
that's how I get my exercise.
Yeah, well, I'm figuring you can use the capture the flag thing with a bike, you know, with a bike. I'm figuring you can use this program with a bike too. It just, you know, you alter it, you know, oh, you stretch out your path or whatever have you, for bike riding. But do you see, you know, could you see this actually working as an actual exercise thing?
Well, for the right audience, yeah. I mean, you gotta understand, you're probably not going to hit the big audience for that. Like they said, you're going to hit the nerd audience, and if it not, the good thing is, and this is something that Laura has been talking about a lot, is the good thing is most
people who are nerds spend a lot of time on the computer in front of the TV. And so if it's a good way for them to go out and get exercise, hell yeah, do it, because they're the ones who need the exercise.
Yeah.
If it takes a special little program to do it, that's fine, as long as it gets done.
I think that's part of the whole, you know, part of the way they've, you know, designed it is it's about the motivation. Zombies, I mean, me personally, zombies fascinate me. I have an obsession with zombies because they terrify the ever-loving piss out of me. So this program, you know, as long as it's done right, and it seems to be done very, very well, I wouldn't say right, but it's done very well, it might be good enough that it might actually motivate me to go out jogging if I could get it.
Hmm.
Yeah, well that's it.
It'd be neat. The only thing is that it's really better if you have somebody who knows that. It's really better to do that if you're not just doing it by yourself. It's more fun to do that with other people.
Yeah.
So it'd be a question of how many other people would you be able, how big is this going to be even in the little towns? Where, you know, maybe the nerd population isn't quite as big, but how easy would it be for other people to kind of coordinate and play that?
Well, I'm not...
Just like anything with anything involving a nerd, it's usually more fun if you can get others in with you. So,
yeah, sure.
Will you be able to go outside, say, okay, you know, I'm over here, let's play a game and just hook up. And that's more on the program side. Is the program going to be set up with that kind of socialization in mind, or are you basically on your own? If it's set up like that, that could be a really good deal then. Because then if it has like some kind of networking thing where it showed you other people.
Well, and I figure they'll eventually develop that and maybe update it for, for multiple users, you know. You want to run with somebody, okay, you say, you know, there is runner, whoever.
Yeah, not even run with them, but just see them. Like, if I'm running and I'm using it and I happen to come up on you when you're using it, not even say that we're running, but just kind of put, like, I was watching Mass Effect. Gamebreaker do Mass Effect, and what they do is if you're playing another team, your team will have like a blue highlight around it.
Yeah.
Just kind of do something like that just to show that, no, this isn't a zombie. You can't exactly do anything, but here's another runner, you know, wave, say hi, do whatever. Just give you some kind of means of identifying.
Here's a thought for each
other.
Okay. So my thought for this is, okay, basically if, you know, say two people are using it, you know, out jogging, running, whatever have you, and interface, you know, and the two programs interface, what it should do is it should recalculate your checkpoints so they, you know, correlate over top of each other. So then it actually becomes a race of who can get to the checkpoint first, and if you don't get to that checkpoint, you have to go off and, you know, run more or something like that, you know, to push you a little further. Basically create a competition, you know, kind of thing, because that's, you know, that's the point of it, is, you know, you're going out collecting
supplies.
Well,
that would be a good add-on to it. I don't know that I'd want the whole thing running like that, but that would be a good alternate mode to it.
Well, it's a thought.
Are you there?
Yeah, sorry, my headpiece fell out for a second.
I cannot hear you.
Hello? 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 Uh-oh, did you lose me? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Can you hear me now? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello? Hello?
cannot hear you.
Hello.
I don't know what's going on. So I will let you just chatter, and you tell me when to turn it off.
Hello? Oh, okay, I am coming through. He can't hear me.
Ah, okay, so I see what happened. His connection died, so he can't hear me at all. Fantastic. Anyways, well, I got that. I can go through that. Nah, I don't feel like that. No. Basically, we're at the end of the show, you know. It's been a very hectic week. Very stressful. Bollocks. So for this week, for all of the hour you're hearing us, you've been listening to Finite Exposure on Jackalope Radio, or at least been listening to Finite Exposure. You can find this episode and other previous episodes on the Jackalope Archives. Just head on over to jackaloperadio.com and head over to their archives. You can download this episode and other previous episodes and other great shows. You can also head over to our website, finiteexposure.com, and check out our archives. Download all of our previous episodes and podcasts, along with Rendell's original podcast, Rendell's Ravings, which is always good for a couple of laughs, because he is crazier than me. stay tuned afterwards for the Big Dumb Fun Show with Jeff Hurst and Jeff Gnay. Bollocks. Oh. After that is Bobby Gimme a Break Radio with Bobby Pizzazz, and then Rock On Radio. Also tonight, recording through the studio is Fangirl Magazine with special guest Darren Lynn Bozeman, who is the man behind Repo, the genetic opera. Yes, the madman who brought us that movie. He'll be sitting down to talk with the girls of Fangirl Magazine about his new feature coming up here soon, and talk a little bit about Repo. You can catch them. I know definitely replays are on Sunday. I think they actually are. Their shows are played Thursday night. Stay tuned around for on Wednesdays. Movies Hate You, and also is Nightwatch Radio and Para Challenge Radio and so many other goodies. Yes. You can also email us, finiteexposure@gmail.com. Head over to Facebook, like us. We always need love. Yeah, so there is that. I really can't think of anything more interesting to say. So, Rendell. Oh, Rendell, good sir. Take us out. Yes. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night for the week.